The dance club is open, Wendy. Hi, everybody. Bill and Wendy.
Nice white pants.
Welcome. Thank you.
Love the flares. They're very slimming.
Thank you so much. It's after Memorial Day. I can get away with them. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to call in, if you want to text in. Use those numbers in that order, 312-981-7200. If you wouldn't mind, I want to talk about something we chatted with Steve about during the crosstalk, and that is your son's graduation and how emotional you were. And I don't blame you because I have been in that same seat and I have cried myself silly.
You cried silly. Too, didn't you?
Insanely. I cried on the way there. I cried on the way home. I'm crying now thinking about it. For crying out loud. Here's my question. What exactly, because I've tried to figure this out, what's making us cry?
It's just these amazing milestones. I mean, Jimmy Mack and I hugged and said, somehow we did it. Yeah. We raised him till 18.
But should that, when you think about, because I've tried to figure this out, because I am so emotional, why would that make you cry?
It wasn't like I was sad.
No, it's not. It isn't a sad cry.
Because when Michael kind of said, "Yeah, I'm going to hang with some of my friends and take some pictures," I look at Jim. I said, "Every other parent is here with their kid. Why are we getting kicked out?"
Yeah.
And then I'm like, "Okay, well, we have dinner reservations at the sushi house at 5." And then it just hit me. It's like I didn't want to walk away. I wanted to stand right next to his side.
Right.
And then when I started walking away, I was crying, not major, and he's like completely mocking me.
Yeah.
And he goes, "Oh, come here. You don't have to go, Mom. Please don't." And I said, "No, these are tears of joy." And they really were.
Right.
I wasn't like, you know.
No, I know.
It was just, it's just when you're filled with emotion, the emotion has nowhere to go, so it shoots out your eye sockets as tears.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
I guess that is what it is. I think... because having been through a couple of these and crying at every single one of them, and at weddings,
yeah,
and at funerals, and at first communions, and at, you know, garage sales.
Well, the garage sales is obvious. You see old toys that
right.
you see when
it's
you were
emotional.
A kid.
Yeah. It's emotional. So I think what it is it's amazement that the passage of time just takes place so quick. Because as you're watching him parade across the stage and picking up a diploma or whatever, you say to yourself, wow, that guy was just born. He was just born, and now this. And I think you're crying because you go, how could it all just speed past me so fast?
I know, and I feel bad for little Dilly Dog the tree frog. Dylan McInerney will be graduating tomorrow night from junior high.
Yeah.
And again in Michael's shadow because, you know, high school is a little bigger.
Yes, it is.
But, you
yes,
know.
Yes, it is.
He gets to pick where he wants to go to dinner tomorrow night. And
Sizzler.
No, he actually said...
Where's he going?
He might want a Baconator.
Wow. Wow.
We got off easy
How
with him.
How proud was Jimmy to hear this
yeah,
from his son?
He was kidding,
That's
though.
My boy.
He was kidding. He wants a steak somewhere. So,
yeah.
Sushi for Michael, steak, I don't know. I guess I'm crying because I'm getting older. And I'm closer
to
death.
You know what? As morose as it sounds, that's part of it, too, is you say to yourself... There are these benchmarks, these milestones, and, you know, even though I'm speeding through them now, at some point, I won't be here to do that. And that's sad, because, you know, you want to be around for stuff. You
yes,
don't want to be
I
dead
do.
For stuff. That's disappointing for everybody. Stay alive. That's
that
my message.
That is it, because on the cusp of your 50th birthday, you told everyone, no celebration, no presents, don't even mention it, I don't want to talk about it. You're fine now, but the apprehension of turning 50 is a freak out.
But I'm like that for every birthday now. Like, there was a time where I was genuinely, hey, now I'm 12, now I'm 15. That was good news. But that number keeps getting higher, and I know it's way better than the alternative,
yeah.
which is the number not getting
or
higher.
Or stopping, yes.
But I don't like the direction this is headed.
Well, there's nothing we can do about it.
No.
Although, don't you laugh because your parents have told everyone listening right now, your parents always say, enjoy the moments because time goes so quickly.
It's true.
And when you're young and you're in school and you're waiting for summer, time does not go very quickly.
Right.
But now, does it not?
At a pace that just doesn't make sense. It just doesn't. Terry and I go for these walks almost every night. When the weather's nice, we go for a walk a couple of miles. And honestly, we pass by the girls' high school. We pass by their grade school. We pass by their kindergarten, their preschool.
The park that they played at.
It's preschool. We just brought them. We would just drop them off, and that's their preschool. And look at how long ago all of a sudden. So
we're old. Face it.
That's what it is.
That's why we're crying.
That's Right. Because we can't control any emotion anymore.
Get the dance party started again, Kevin. Let's go dance party.
Yeah, dance
party
is the only way that we can survive. That's the only way to survive. All right, now may I ask this?
Here's our dance party.
That's better. Now I feel better. Thanks, Kevin. We feel better now.
Do the bump with me, Bill.
No, because I'll break a hip. I don't want to do that and break a hip. Please. You're trying to trap me. Did they make the announcement prior to the ceremony? There's a lot of kids. There's 990 kids about to graduate. Do not be applauding and hooting and howling until it's all over. Did they do that?
Can we take a break and can I tell you?
Yeah. I would love to hear what happened.
There were some things.
Oh, were there things?
And I got to tell you, we were not the worst behaved parents at the place.
Oh,
can I
was,
just say that?
I was positive you wouldn't be.
I thought that. For sure we would be.
But you didn't. I bet you didn't make the top 10.
Mm-mm.
Probably not. All right, we'll discuss that and other things if you want to jump in. Jump slowly. We're all getting old. 312-981-7200 is our number. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Yeah.
Graduation time. A lot of people have graduated. A lot of kids have graduated. LT High School, a little late in my opinion. It was last night.
Yeah.
Or yesterday afternoon.
They're still coming, though. It's not the end of the line. There's still people graduating.
I guess. And Tony is on the line. Hi, Tony. We were talking about parents. They did not actually give the speech of hold your applause.
Oh, they didn't.
They didn't.
Huh.
But everybody was adhering to it. There were a few bad people, which I will talk about in a moment.
Names.
I don't know their names, but believe me, I tried to find them on Facebook.
Yeah.
Tony?
Yeah. They made the same speech. I was at my nephew's high school graduation yesterday. They made the same speech. But one of the kids did something kind of bizarre.
What?
He had himself introduced. I forgot his name, but I'm going to say the name Bill Left.
All right.
We don't confuse them. He had himself introduced as Bill Left the first, which implies that either he's got a kid on the way,
right.
He knows he's going to get married and have a son.
Yeah.
Or I was thinking, well, what if he gets married and has five daughters? Then
Maybe. What was the reaction from the audience on that?
A couple of people like turned to each other and said, "What is he doing? What is
That's very funny."
Well, he was jealous of all the seconds and the thirds and juniors, so the first. I like that.
I guess so. Yeah, he introduced himself as the first, which was kind of a unique thing. I thought
good for him. That's very funny. Thanks, Tony.
Bye-bye.
Have a good day. Bye.
I don't know if this will play on the air, but this is when they announced Michael's name.
Yeah.
See?
Just one quick.
The woo.
One quick.
That
and that's
was it.
From your husband, I'm hoping.
Yes, it
okay,
was.
Good.
There was a family, and I really don't remember at the beginning of the ceremony of them saying, you know, wait till the end, but there were families that would make noise, but they were very quick, like Jim was.
Yeah.
And that's okay. But there was one, all right, two families for sure, maybe three, that like were whistling and yelling.
Yeah.
And this one guy stood up and was whistling like crazy. So you did not hear the kid's next name.
That's... Anyone break out the vuvuzela?
What is that?
Remember the horns that they used to have at the World Cup?
Oh, I do remember that.
Yeah.
I didn't know what that was called.
No one had those.
Somebody did yell goal, which was really weird.
For a minute and
I
a half.
Thought it was you for
no,
a minute.
No, I wasn't there. It was not me.
But I'll tell you, LT High School, and I don't know if they've done this in the past, but almost 1,000 kids, hour and a half in and out.
Seriously?
Here's what they did.
That's one every 5 seconds.
They had two podiums going, and one teacher did the A through M's, and the other teacher did M through Z. So they did just back and forth, like a name, walk up, a name. Back and forth, they rotated podiums, bing, bang, boom, hour and a half, done.
Who says public schools aren't efficient?
Right.
That was awesome.
Boom. Did they mispronounce some of the kids with longer names? Because there's always one or two, and then they apologize really quickly.
And I feel so sad when they do that. But they had a meeting afterwards for each and every kid to go to the speaker to say, how do you say your name?
Oh, they did. Wait, afterwards?
No, I'm sorry. Yeah, after school one day before the ceremony,
Okay.
Just to go over pronunciations.
Oh, that's
and
a good move.
There were still a couple pauses.
Right.
A couple of repeats.
There's always some kid from a faraway. His parents came from a faraway land, and there's a lot of letters that don't look like they would make sense, but and then their name is mispronounced, and it's sad. It's awful.
All we care about is the name spelled right in the on the diploma mainly, right. But in the program, too.
You want it that way. Yeah.
But I couldn't believe the efficiency of Lyons Township High School, the back and forth, A through M's, M through Z, just one right after another. Bing. Bang.
That is, if they did it, you said 1,000 names in 90 minutes.
It's probably 970 kids. It was amazing. And speeches by the class president,
yeah,
the superintendent, the principal, yeah, and still an hour and a half.
And all the speeches, I'm guessing, were on the uptick. They were all positive,
yep,
right? About how this, we can get out there and make a difference, that kind of thing.
It was a lot of, you know, we are now embarking on a new career. Don't be afraid to climb that mountain.
Yeah.
If you climb the wrong mountain, that's okay. Just climb the right mountain, yeah, and search for your goals. That's, and it was really...
You have to say, if somebody went up and went, class of 2017, whoa, are we screwed? That would be awful, right?
Or where do we start sending the student loan bills?
Right.
When do we start paying that?
Right. Right. I wonder what that kind of a speech would meet with. Disdain.
This kid, Tim, and I don't know his last name, nor do I want to know if I want to say it on the air. I don't know his last,
yeah,
name, but he got up there to speak, and he's like, "Hi, my name is Tim such and such, and I like long walks on the beach."
Oh.
And people kind of didn't know how to react, and he said, "Yeah, that didn't go over so well, but you know what? I wanted to take a risk, and that's why I did that. So I'm telling you, go ahead and take that risk.
Don't
play it safe." And I got goosebumps saying it because that was really great.
That is, you know what? That is a good chance,
yeah,
to take. It really is.
What if it had worked out for him?
Well, they did kind of
laugh.
People did laugh, but it just, people didn't know how to react to it, I think.
At my daughter's, their biggest fear for both of them would be that they would slip on the stage. Both of them, in the days leading up to it, said, "What if we slip?" And I said, "Why would you even think that? The odds of that." And they said, "No, a couple of years ago, a girl slipped. She went to get her diploma, and as she was going for it, the stage is slick." And I go, "Well, no one would remember that." And the lady who was making the speeches up there, who was an official at the high school, said, "And everybody, remember, be very careful on the stage. Remember a couple of years ago when that girl slipped on stage?"
Oh, no.
So that like lives on forever, that moment. That's something they'll talk about forever, is that girl who slipped on the stage. No matter what she achieves in the rest of her life, she's the girl who slipped on the stage at graduation.
A lot of girls were wearing the big wedges,
yeah,
in the platform.
That's
so
why.
Yeah.
You have to be careful.
But efficiency, amazing. Susan, you were at the Lyons Township High School ceremony yesterday.
Yes, I was.
Hour and a half. And am I lying?
No, the ceremony was over in an hour and 5 minutes.
What?
We were home in an hour and a half.
I'm going years from now on. That's a much better deal.
It's been that way. I had two other grandchildren that graduated, and it was an hour or less.
Isn't,
wow,
that amazing? It was so hot in that gym yesterday, I swear,
yeah,
to God.
Bet.
You should have been in the auxiliary building. We had theater seats, and we had air conditioning, and it was wonderful.
Was that the flow over of people who didn't have tickets and wanted to watch?
No, it was a flow over, but it was accommodations because they knew that the field house would be completely full. So they just opened that up. It's where they have all their theater productions and band concerts and stuff.
So you watched it on like a wide screen. They had a big TV or something set up, right?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
I would have done that.
That's better.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations to the graduate, child or grandchild.
Twin grandsons.
Oh,
very nice.
Congratulations.
Very nice.
Over 6 feet tall.
Oh, wow. You are the kids.
Yes.
Oh, the kids are? Okay, that's good, too.
Yes.
Congratulations,
okay.
Susan.
We should really require that our callers tell us how tall they are.
All right,
I'd like to know. How tall are you?
Hi there. You have a question for us.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
You're going to do something. You're going to try and have us pronounce your name, but I want to make sure the spelling's right.
Okay. Spell it.
You spell it for me. I don't know your name.
Oh, this is like the script spelling bee. I watched this last week. All right, go ahead.
All right. It's Z-I-E Zeche.
What is the origin?
No, how do you pronounce it? Zeche.
You said what?
Zeche.
Zeche.
Can I try it?
Yeah.
Kafefe.
Oh, you win. Bill wins.
What'd you say?
I hope I didn't offend you.
So how do we say it? I say Zeche.
Okay.
Ceviche.
It's pronounced Z-T.
No, that's not
Ziti? That's a pasta.
That can't be right.
How tall are you?
Where is this name from? Where is it from? I don't know. I was going to guess, but I would have guessed wrong. Luxembourg?
the thing is, though, when I was at graduation and whatever, my principal came up to me, he says, how do you pronounce your name?
Yeah.
And I said, just put Z/key.
Z-key.
Oh, Z-key.
Z-key.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was Z-D.
Is it Middle Eastern?
No, it's German.
It's German. And
for
what is
Zachary?
Is it Zach? It could be Zachary, right? Is that it?
I'm sorry?
What, does it translate in
Thuringer.
English to Zachary? What does it mean?
Liver sausage.
I went to Milwaukee Fest for German Fest or whatever. I looked up the name Zeke, and it said soft pillow.
Oh, a soft pillow.
Well, come by. We'll lay on you.
Yeah.
Aren't you glad you called, Zeke?
Not right now, but when you have a free moment. Well, thank you, Zeke.
And the thing is, though, my wife went to a business conference or whatever, and they pronounced her name Zeche.
Oh, no, that's not right at all. It's Zeke.
I like Zeche better, quite honestly. You should think about changing it. Have a great day. Thank you so much for calling.
That
we appreciate
my pillow,
it.
Wendy.
I'll lay on him.
Well,
could you put glasses on?
No,
you are getting old.
I am.
Start crying.
Can I? I'm going to. At some point in today's show, I'm going to. Ryan, thanks. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Join in, would you? 312-981-7200. You can call us or text us. You were not here on Friday, but we discussed a little bit about the Kathy Griffin situation. And I know you have some thoughts on it. And there's been an update or two. And then over the weekend, Bill Maher also was criticized for some things that were said on his show on HBO.
Do people just think you can say anything anymore?
I guess, yeah.
Kathy Griffin,
well,
It
is, I mean, really, one of the best things about the country is...
Free speech.
It's free speech. So some people have mentioned that Kathy Griffin took it a little too far, and Bill Maher may have also taken it too far. We'll discuss that. What were you going to say? I'm sorry.
Well, Kathy Griffin, I liked her when she was first starting out. She was kind of a la Joan Rivers, mean, and she was funny.
Yeah.
She hasn't done anything for me lately in the way of making me laugh, although, to be fair, I have not watched a lot of her stand-up routines.
Yeah.
I've just seen her on things. And... she has the right to do what she wants. She held up that bloodied
mask
I'm just going to say.
Yeah.
And then she apologized.
Right.
And then the press conference, I thought, made it worse.
Yeah, I think it did too.
Because she was out there, is that Gloria Allred's daughter that is her attorney? That's what I read or heard.
Is it? Yeah.
And, you know, you can say whatever you want, blah, blah, blah. And then Kathy Griffin goes on and she's... It was a weird press conference because she was doing like some shtick in the midst of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then she said, you know, I got to be honest with you. I believe that, in my opinion, his family and he are trying to ruin my career. And she's like, he broke me.
Yeah.
He broke me.
Yeah.
And she started crying. And then she went on to say, but I'm going to keep making fun of him. That to me was a contradiction of herself. Did he break you or did he not?
Right. And she also said that because she's a woman that, the story's playing out the way it's playing out because she's a woman. And I don't know that part's true.
That's not true.
I'm a huge fan of hers. I really like her a lot. I think she did go too far with this. But I also don't think that this was her idea. I think either the photographer or whoever put this photo shoot together said, you know, we'll do a couple pictures this way. We'll do a couple pictures this way. You'll hold up the head. They didn't think it through clearly enough, obviously.
Although she wanted to get a reaction out of people, she got what she wanted.
Right. Here's a little bit of an update over the weekend. Lewis County in Tennessee has a place called the Lewis County Store, and they are no stranger to controversy. They like to put things on their attraction board. You know, a lot of times you'll drive by a store and there'll be either an electronic attraction board that'll send you a message or
one the old school with the letters that you have to put up.
Yeah. Early Friday morning, one motorist who drove past the store, which is located, as I mentioned, in Tennessee, the motorist wishes to remain anonymous, but he read this sign and took pictures of this sign on the Lewis County store. It says $50,000 reward for Kathy Griffin's head delivered. He said, "I know this seems like a bad joke, but is this legal?" He wrote an email to the Tennessean, that's the newspaper out there, and says, "I'm not sure that this is covered by free speech. Generally, the First Amendment protects even speech that may be construed as offensive." So that's the way they're dealing with it. They're very upset over what Kathy Griffin did, and they're saying, if you want to play games, we'll play games too. Bring us your head. It's $50,000.
And what about Ted Nugent, who said he wanted the head of the administration and Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, but it was okay because you go listen to Wango Tango and you forget everything?
Something like that.
Well, the argument she was making is that the fact that she is a woman is one of the reasons why this was front and center.
I don't know that that's true, though.
Well, she said that, you know, Marilyn Manson has done similar things to this. There are other rock musicians who have used Trump, you know, in various ways, whether it be, you know.
Was it this extreme,
kind of
though? Let's be honest.
Well, you know, I think to her credit, too, maybe that means that she's more high profile among those people.
Oh, maybe.
I mean, that's
no,
possibility.
I think the image was worse. That's what I think.
Yeah, seeing a picture that's that disturbing is probably harsher on our brains than hearing words that are that disturbing, right?
And if Marilyn Manson held the head up, you couldn't tell which was which.
Well, that's
really
the thing too. You expect that from Marilyn Manson, right? I mean, he's always kind of pushing the envelope.
But to some extent, Ryan, I expect this sort of thing from Kathy Griffin too. I mean, she hasn't done anything where there's been a graphic picture of a beheaded president in the past. Nothing close to that. But her job is essentially to shock us with celebrities.
The reactions are interesting, though, because you bring up Bill Maher and think about the word that he used and if Sean Hannity had used a word like that.
Well,
let
me take that in a slightly different direction. So for those of you who are not up to date on what Bill Maher's situation is, it's this. On Friday night, Bill Maher was doing his show, and at the beginning of every episode, before he does his regular panel on the HBO show where there's three guests, he brings out one specific guest. It's usually an author, not always, sometimes a politician, but it's an author or a politician more times than not. And on Friday's edition of the show, it was Senator Ben Sasse from Nebraska, who is a Republican, but really his ideas are kind of across the board. So he's written a book called The Vanishing American Adult, and the book deals with how kids today feel a little more entitled than they have in the past. And it was the conversation was a couple of minutes in, and they were kind of sparring, but it was a friendly sparring back and forth.
And that's typical for his type of show, correct?
Very much so. Very much so. Yeah, there was nothing out of the ordinary going on whatsoever. So then all of a sudden, Ben Sasse invites Bill Maher to come to Nebraska, and he says, here's the quote, "We'd love to have you work in the fields with us," the fields of Nebraska. So then Bill Maher pauses a little bit and he looks at Ben Sasse and he goes, "Work in the fields, Senator, I'm a House N-word." And it gets, I would say, a mixed response, not an overwhelming response one way or another. Some people laugh and give it a quick clap. Some people groan a little bit. You hear a little bit of mix. Bill Maher says something to the effect of, "Come on, it's a joke." And then the show goes on. Well, after the show, there were problems because a lot of people were upset that he used the N-word. Mr. Sasse himself said, "I didn't really handle it properly. I should have called him out on it at the moment."
He felt guilty about not reacting.
But you don't know in that situation. It's Bill Maher's show, so you say, "I'm kind of a guest on the show. Is it my place to call him out?"
Kind of like the Billy Bush thing, not calling Trump out.
Very much like the Billy Bush thing.
It's like you're always going to be in a situation. It's not this guy Sasse's right to really say anything. He just regrets it because he wasn't he didn't approve of it.
I think sometimes I'm sure you've been in a conversation where somebody says something and it's so out of left field and you didn't expect it and you think, what do I do? Yeah, it's probably better to just go on.
Let it slide because I don't want to start something or I don't want to get involved or this is going to ruin the day.
Right.
I mean, come on. Politically speaking, a lot of us have relatives at our house every once in a while that you don't even bring up politics because you know it's going to get overheated and somebody's going to walk out the door.
Right. Now, to Ryan's point, Ryan, you had said it. What if Sean Hannity had said this, right?
Yeah.
Because they're constantly at each other's throats, or Sean Hannity and Bill Maher. So would Bill Maher have said how unacceptable it was for him to use the N-word? I kept thinking this. I thought this Friday night when I saw it originally, and I'm still thinking it today. Is this a big deal if the host had been African American, if the host of The Daily Show, or if Larry Wilmore, or if I'm trying to think of who would be a better example. Let's just say any African American host who's hosting a similar show.
What if Chris Rock is filling in for him or something?
Right.
Would that be a good example?
Yeah,
or?
Chris Rock would be a great example. So is this even a story if Chris Rock says it? And I know that this isn't a debate that I'm starting. This is a debate that's been going on forever. Is the word acceptable if an African-American person says the word? Does that make it acceptable or not?
That's a great question. I know it happens. I know I'm still uncomfortable hearing it.
I'm almost always uncomfortable hearing it. I've said this in the past. For some reason, when I would hear Richard Pryor's comedy routines, and boy, he said the word constantly, I almost didn't hear it. It was almost just part of the
different
landscape.
Different time, though, yeah.
Without a doubt, different time. Without a doubt. But in Richard Pryor's case, and in other comedians' cases, not just Richard Pryor, I almost feel like for him to get his point across, I hate to say the word was necessary, but it was certainly part of the landscape of whatever that joke or story was. And I don't think Bill Maher was doing it to be racist. I don't think he was doing it to shock anybody. He just quickly thought of a joke. He was putting together fields. Do I want to work in the fields of Nebraska?
He could have done something better, and he's quicker than that. And didn't he have regrets about saying it after he said it?
Oh, apologized the next day.
So that's why, come on, he does this for a living. We all speak off the cuff.
Right.
You have to think a half a second before you talk. I know it doesn't seem like I do.
Yeah.
But he knew better.
Right. But you know, dropping words like that, especially in your profession where you're at right now, there would be some kind of repercussion.
Immediately.
Right? Yeah.
And there should be. I mean,
But with him, I think because, I don't know if people know his story, but when he had the show Politically Incorrect on ABC, he was let go from that contract because he said some things about 9/11 that a lot of people were offended by. So his contract was up.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they got rid of him because of that. So he has some history. So he's always kind of talked about how, but now that I'm on HBO, I can kind of say anything. But then he just found out he can't.
Yeah, HBO came back. They were not happy with that at all. And they've got, you know, he had kind of a lame excuse, too, saying that on show nights he doesn't get a lot of sleep.
Right.
So, was that something that,
you
know, if you don't get a lot of sleep, does that mean that you all of a sudden start using words that you normally wouldn't use?
Well, you sometimes are more slap happy.
Maybe, but.
Yeah,
but
it was
no excuse.
No, not even close. Not even close.
And yes, freedom of speech, we should all have it. But I don't know. Can't we be nice in our freedom of speech? Respectful, and get our point across.
Yeah. All right. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break, and then I'm going to run you some footage from CNN from something that happened.
Did you
yesterday.
Bring in your film strip projector?
I brought in my film strip projector and the close and play. I brought them both in. So, wait till you hear this. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder.
All right. So, a couple of events over the last week or so. First, Kathy Griffin. Which he apologized, then Bill Maher, which he has apologized, and then this over the weekend. Over on CNN, they've got the girl on who is the winner of the Scripps Spelling Bee. Her name is Ananya Vinay. She is 12 years old. She is from the United States, but her lineage is Indian. So the hosts over at CNN, Allison Camaretta and Chris Cuomo, are talking to her about winning the spelling bee, and everything's going fine. And then, at the very end, they ask her, this little girl, Ananya, to spell kofefe, which is the word of the week. That's the word that Donald Trump mistweeted, we think. All right? So listen to how this ends and how horrible this finishes out for the hosts and for Ananya. Listen.
Kofefe, C-O-F-E-F-E.
Good enough.
Close. You win.
Thank you very much. That's the only good answer we've heard about that word in days.
It was really C-O-V-F-E.
We don't know that.
F-E.
But it, again, is a nonsense word. So we're not sure that its root is actually in Sanskrit, which is what you're probably used to using. So I don't know. Anyway.
Yikes.
Oh, did that fall flat? It was a good idea, I have to tell you. But they should have set it up better or something. And
those
just a
interviews
bonus
with the kids are always rough, though. If you you go back years and they're interviewing, you know, I mean, we're talking to fourth, fifth, sixth, and sixth graders, you know, who have never been on a national stage before. Sometimes these interviews can be rough in the first place. Oh, that didn't help.
Do you think she knows how to read Sanskrit?
No, there's no reason to believe that she. I mean, I know that she's of Indian descent, but there's no reason to think that that would mean that she would be more familiar with Sanskrit. She's lived in the United States all 12 of her years. So you even saw Chris Cuomo, who I like very, very much. He just did kind of a, oh, really? Did you just say that? You couldn't tell because you're only hearing the audio. But when you see it, you just see this 1/3 of a second where he's like, oh, what was that?
Some people should not operate without cue cards.
Right.
I mean, honest to God.
Right.
If you're not used to doing that, then I could see you'd misspeak.
Allison Camaretta does that often. I mean, she, you know, she's doing...
Says stupid things?
No. Just these interviews. And I'm sure in her head, again, you have a split second to decide, am I going to say this or am I not going to say this? She took the wrong path.
Bill, but I have no filters whatsoever. You know that.
Yeah.
And for some reason, things get filtered
right
when they're most important.
Right.
If I can do it, anyone can do it.
But that's the thing is you play on a percentage where you say, and I would certainly say this about Kathy Griffin and Bill Maher as well. How many hundreds, if not thousands, of things are they saying that could, you know, you could potentially offend somebody with something at some point? So more times than not, they're not playing it safe, but they're getting it done efficiently and properly. So do you ruin a career? Is Kathy Griffin ever going to do stand-up again? Is Bill Maher going to get fired from HBO for this?
Those are great questions.
I don't know. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We've got news, and then there's a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Ryan.
Wendy, I have always liked, and I know you have too, Lindsay Rice from DNA Info, but I have such a new respect for her because she has a tattoo of Troy McClure from The Simpsons on her arm. And wow, that's amazing. That's so cool.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
This is my Simpsons arm.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up obsessed with The Simpsons. Love them. Troy McClure.
Who's Bart is a bird? What's that one? I can't remember that.
That's from the Treehouse of Horror, right?
Yeah, that's when they did The Raven.
Yeah.
And Bart was the Raven.
Right.
And I have a little one of Lisa. I have another one of...
I just like in today's day and age, a person can say, that's my Simpsons arm, and nobody looks... Everybody goes, well, oh, that's the girl's Simpson arm. What are you going
to
do?
Right, of course. Don't you have an arm dedicated to your favorite TV show you've gotten tattooed on yourself?
Yeah.
Bill, your whole body would be tattooed if you did your favorite shows and toys.
What is in my car 54? Where are you back?
Where are you? I get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Excellent.
I was just going to say it's funny you say that because Lindsay Rice is one of our favorite guests that we have here. She's a reporter, producer, DNAinfo.com in Chicago. And your beat is Edgewater, Rogers Park, and West Ridge. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You have such interesting and fascinating stories. And today, are we going to focus on homegrown Chicago type things?
Yeah.
All right. Talk to us because I love all this stuff.
Well, so this there's a new museum exhibit at the Edgewater Historical Society, and once I was kind of delving into what is this exhibit, because I, of course, love the Edgewater Historical Society.
That's an Edgewater bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. They put it in the right place.
You couldn't tell.
They nailed it.
They really did well on that, mm-hmm, location-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's this new exhibit, and actually it was curated by a regular, everyday person,
mm-hmm,
who a few years ago was in an antique shop in Andersonville. He bought this old kind of like rusty scale, thought it would be like just an interesting focal piece. You know,
a food scale?
Yeah, for his kitchen. So, mm-hmm, it was just going to kind of be like a statement decorative piece.
Nice.
And he realized that it was stamped made in Chicago. And he's like, oh, that's kind of interesting. So he kind of, you know, started Googling around, where did this come from? And,
mm-hmm,
he was just really fascinated by that history. So as the months went on, he kind of collected a few other things, and he said that it basically just spiraled out of control. And he was far down the rabbit hole trying to learn a lot about these companies and, you know, just Chicago's really rich manufacturing past. And, you know, it was interesting because he was saying that most people, it was actually kind of difficult, even though some of these companies are really well known, because people have a tendency to not be taking pictures of their workplace,
you know,
thinking in the moment, oh, this could be interesting 50, 70 years from now.
And there were no iPhones.
Right. So, you know, it was a lot more of an endeavor to take a photo and to do those that kind of documentation.
Yeah.
Normally, people take pictures of things like when they're finally done with work and, you know, they're out living their lives.
Right, sure.
So eventually, over the past 2 years, he's amassed like 200 pieces of things that were all just sitting in his one bedroom apartment. And he was saying, you know, his friends knew something was going on when they would come over. And he made what he called the Made in Chicago Museum.
How cool.
It was basically a digital museum where he has great photographs, long descriptive features on the history of these with great photos, advertisements. He's made an excellent map that, you know, maps a lot of where these places were all across the city.
Mm-hmm.
And they're now on display. They have a home, a temporary home, for the next year at the Chicago or at the Edgewater Historical Society.
Where is that? I know I joke and say it's in Edgewater, but do we have an address for that?
Yeah, it's 5358 North Ashland Avenue.
I have to see that. I have something that he may want, although I don't know that I'm going to part with it. Again, went to an antique store, and I have lawn ornaments in my garden, and there is one of those old sprinklers that's made of wrought iron and just like one little bar that spins around, and it says some water company, Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, yeah. He would be really interested in that, I'm sure.
All right.
I mean, there's so many just...
$1 million.
That seems like a fair price, Wendy. Yeah, get $1 million for it.
I mean, it's perfect. His stuff, it really centers around like everyday life.
Yeah.
So it has, you know, globes and tools and kitchen items, you know, attire, different things like that. One item that I found particularly interesting was the history of Maybelline in Chicago, the, you know, international
cosmetics
makeup company today. Mm-hmm. He has some of the original Maybelline tins. It was like a
powder came in it?
Yeah, it was like a powder, kind of like a black powder, or some of them were a little creamier, and it had like a little brush. He has those there, and that has its own incredible history, for which I fell down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
So I totally get where this guy's coming from.
Maybelline started in Chicago. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, in Edgewater, actually. And
that's Maybelline.
Isn't it Maybelline? Is that their phrase?
Yeah, that's it.
Isn't it Maybelline?
How do you know that?
I'm a consumer,
Maybe it's
Wendy.
Maybelline.
Maybe it's Maybelline. It might be Maybelline. I know Maybelline, of course, is still up and running and doing well, but a lot of these companies, I'm guessing, are fallen away. They're not around anymore, are they?
Yeah, a lot of them, you know, just technology changing, industries changing. You know, Maybelline, for example, it started in 1915, and its founder was a closeted gay man, and he started this company after seeing his sister, whose name is Mabel, accidentally have a tragic over-bleaching accident. So her, you know...
That's terrible.
Would pray for her, but her eyelashes, her eyebrows were really light, and she had
lean.
Kind of... Yeah.
That's why.
They're kind of like invisible. She had made this concoction of like Vaseline and coal powder.
Oh, no.
And he saw her applying that one day and was like, is there a market for this?
He did all right.
Yeah,
because I look like James Spader if I don't wear mascara.
Right.
I really do.
Right.
So he just took that idea. He ran with it. He made this company. And actually, in Edgewater, the building that it was housed in for over 50 years still has a cursive M.
Oh, really?
For Maybelline.
Yeah, and, you know, above the door.
Even though they're no longer the inhabitants of the building, right? They've moved on, but wow, that's great.
Whatever happened to Maybelline? Kidding. Great Lash is always like one of the number one top mascaras, even though other companies sell mascara that's five times as much. They always say in like models' goodie bags and stuff, they always look back to Great Lash by Maybelline.
Yeah, the classic, you know, that's the one I like.
Pink and green.
Pink and green, exactly. You can't go wrong with the pink and green.
And Wendy, what was the Wacky Packages version of Maybelline? Do you remember?
No, but evidently you do.
That was a cow with her eyelashes being done up with Maybelline. One of the best Wacky Packages of all time.
You should bring that back. I know they have made a comeback, but they need to be funnier. Right. So you should write
all right
for them.
I will do that. That's my goal. Yep. All right. Let's take a quick break and then more discussion with Lindsay Rice from DNA Info. If you want to join in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right. Lindsay Rice is here, reporter, producer with DNAinfo.com here in Chicago. The Made in Chicago Museum is something we were talking about earlier. It was just originally digital. Correct?
Mm, right.
But you can go to the Edgewater Historical Society, 5338 North Ashland.
5358 North Ashland.
5358. And check out some of these things. You had talked about the originator of Maybelline mascara. I can't help but think about where it began with putting Vaseline on your eyelashes and then kohl powder to like squeeze it on there to make them look darker. It would have smeared all over the place.
Right, right, which is already a problem enough as it is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there'd probably be an aroma from the kohl powder, I'm guessing, right? Wouldn't there be a slight...
Hey, smoky?
Maybe that's where the term smoky eye came from.
Isn't that? I bet that's true.
Yes, I don't know. Let's say yes.
Yeah, let's go with it.
All right. All right, so what's the name of the guy who invented this because his sister was putting the Vaseline in coal? His name?
His name was Thomas Lyle Williams. And his great-niece, Sherry Williams... She has done a lot of research on the family history, and I spoke with her. She wrote a book a few years ago all about the Maybelline history, and one of the reasons that she did it was to really give her great-uncle's legacy kind of the
props that
right,
it deserved.
Right, exactly, the oomph that it
the
deserves.
Yeah.
And one reason in particular was, as I had mentioned, he was in the closet. He mm-hmm. was gay. He had a longtime partner who was kind of this advertising genius. Mm-hmm. Together, they grew this company. And Maybelline started in 1915. So as it was growing in the 20s, you know, that especially in Chicago, it was a very dramatic time. You know, you got jazz, flappers, and Edgewater was this really opulent area with the Edgewater Beach Hotel and kind of like where, you know, ritziness and glam was like happening all the time. So it was really easy for him to, you know, sort of blend in a sense. He was very fashionable. Mm-hmm. He even wore makeup sometimes. And it wasn't a huge deal because a lot of people, you know, were flashy as well.
Guys, though, were guys doing that back then?
I think men were a lot more fashionable at the time. You know, wearing hats, coats, you know, nice suits with different fabrics and stuff like that. Yeah. Maybe not all wearing makeup, but maybe some.
People with blonde eyelashes. Trust me, you need it.
Yeah, right, yeah. So when the Great Depression hit, That was a turning point for him and for the company because it was not easy to be out then. It was almost impossible to be out and especially be successful and be out. And he really didn't want to be anything other than himself.
Yeah.
You know, he still wanted to express himself the way that he felt comfortable and was authentic to him. So, but it was really standing out.
Yeah.
And in a time where people were desperate for money, you know, it's calling attention to how rich his family is. And it was putting them in danger for not just him being gay, but also having money.
Mm-hmm.
So he and his partner and some of the family who were involved with the business, they packed up and moved to Hollywood. They bought this beautiful house with a pool and, you know, just surrounded by trees. And it was so much easier for him there because he really revolutionized advertising, especially cosmetics advertising, by using Hollywood starlets mm-hmm. To, you know, be the face, the literal face of Maybelline. And
to
he could kind of
it.
Like stand in the shadows.
Yeah.
You know, so you'd open a newspaper or a magazine or, you know, just an ad at wherever. and you, there's like a paragraph about describing Maybelline and why every woman needs it. And then you, you know, see these beautiful, iconic faces that mm-hmm. normally you would only see in a silver screen. But that was kind of, that it kind of even goes back to Maybelline's origins, where when he saw what his sister was wearing, the dark makeup, that was really only something that people had been seeing in, you know, like silent films
right.
and,
oh, yeah.
and things like that, you know, to pronounce facial features right. and things like that. But you didn't see it so much in everyday use.
Yeah.
So he really, with the inspiration of his sister, popularized that a lot.
And I got to write him a thank you note for his ancestors.
It might be too late.
Yeah, yeah. I know.
He really was an LGBT kind of pioneer of industry yeah. in his time, though didn't have that recognition, you know. But of course, as many other LGBT pioneers and other right. types of pioneers, you know, same. But, you know, now it's June. It's Pride Month. It was just a really nice story to kind
yeah,
of
sure.
Draw attention to. His incredible contributions to
Lindsay,
beauty.
Real quick, you mentioned the Edgewater Beach Hotel, and I have seen, and I'm sure you've seen the same posters I have, posters from like the 1920s and 1930s where the Edgewater Beach Hotel really looks like it's out of Miami, Florida. It has mm-hmm. this tropical look. You wouldn't associate it with Chicago because we only have that kind of weather a couple months.
Right.
But those pictures just made it look like a palace and almost like a southern palace. It had quite a reputation back then, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was amazing. And it really put the neighborhood on the map.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a destination for athletes, politicians, movie stars. Martin Luther King Jr. spoke there.
Yeah.
So many amazing people throughout the years. And like many things, you know, it had a deterioration over
yeah.
time. And, which a lot of it had to do with the expansion of Lakeshore Drive in the 50s,
oh, yeah.
kind of cutting off their private beach, which was a huge draw.
They reconfigured that whole beach area, didn't they?
Right, yeah. So that changed it a lot. Then they had a private pool,
mm-hmm.
and it just wasn't the same.
Mm-hmm.
But that the hotel itself was just such
so
an amazing
opulent.
Thing.
Yeah.
yeah, and it really was like out of another
yeah.
state
Beautiful.
Altogether.
All right, she's Lindsay Rice. She's with DNAinfo.com. And how do we read about this? Also, Zenith is another company that just began. We only have 30 seconds here, but it was a tiny little shack that sold electronics.
It was this tiny. It started in a kitchen between two friends who had been in the Navy, and then the Edgewater Beach Hotel allowed it to use this itty-bitty literal radio shack on its property to have a little space to manufacture electronics and also have a little satellite. And of course now it's this international company owned by LG. So it's just,
it's amazing,
yeah.
man. And
yeah.
we all owe it to Chicago. How can we read more about everything you've put together? She's Lindsay Rice, by the way.
You can go to DNAinfo.com/Chicago.
And follow her on Twitter, Lindsay Rice, LINZERICE. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you guys.
Thanks, Lindsay. Appreciate it. We'll take a quick break. We have news next and then more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
On, Zorn, Zorn, the greatest father in all the land. Zorn, 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 we sing the praises of Zorn.
All right, now, as sad as that is for us to hear, because the show has been canceled.
Who watched it? Come on, that's why it was canceled.
Even the Zorns didn't watch Son of Zorn.
Even your family did not watch the show. But now, can I tell you what I saw over the weekend? I saw a TV commercial for a place called the Zorn Brewery in Indiana. Are you even aware that this place exists?
I've heard of it. People have sent me like coasters and stuff.
Oh, they have?
Like, yeah.
Oh,
fun.
I think it's very
yeah.
cool. I got to go down there and demand some free
you
stuff.
You get a discount. Your
I
last
should.
Name is the
Come
same
on.
As theirs.
Half off.
I don't think that matters. Snyder's Pretzels don't give me anything.
No,
drink
nothing?
One, get one free. Come on.
There's a beer that has my name on it, but
yes.
there's an E at the end.
I know.
L-E-F-F-E.
Yes. I see it. I smile.
I don't like that spelling.
No, that's...
Lefe.
It's wrong.
Yeah.
It sounds. It
Hefe.
Seems Frenchy, doesn't it?
It sounds
German.
Too Frenchy.
Too Frenchy.
Yeah, I won't partake in
not
any
a,
Frenchy sounding.
Not
beer.
A freedom name, but
no,
a Frenchy.
No, no,
name.
No. A couple things to discuss with you, Eric. Oh, it is Eric Zorn of the Tribune, but you already know that. One of them is the tweets of the month. You bring these by every month, and we always enjoy
these. I bring them by every
these.
Month. These are good. I like these. These are the top 10 tweets, and these are my opinions. You know, every week I do a poll, reader poll. I give people like, you know, 10, 15
sure.
tweets, and they vote on them, and I pick and they pick the number one tweet, put that in the paper. These 10 are the ones that came in close but didn't win, but these are my favorites.
Now, are these the most inventive or the ones that make you laugh
out
loud?
These are the ones that made me laugh. These are the ones that amused me for the most part. And you know what? I'll have Kevin put this, we're done, the attributions, or I'll give some of them, but you know, we'll put them up so people can savor them in their own time when they're done, because you don't want people to have to
rush through
these. Well, what's going to happen otherwise is people will pull to the side of the road really quickly and maybe strike somebody in order to write it down, and nobody wants that.
Nobody wants that.
Nobody wants the headline, Bill and Wendy Show blamed.
Killed somebody.
Yeah, for serious
press
traffic.
There is that.
So anyway.
All right.
Here's the first one. Winnie the Pooh is an addict who doesn't wear pants and lives in the woods. If he were a person, he'd be the first suspect in every crime.
That's pretty funny.
Is that true?
Oh, bother.
Right.
Lost cat? Cats know where they live. Your cat didn't like you.
That is really funny.
Yeah, that's funny.
If I had a time machine, I'd pretty much just visit myself at the grocery store to warn me that the veggies I'm buying will go bad.
It's good.
Just threw out some moldy lettuce and cucumbers in the veggie drawer the other day.
That one's more practical than it is funny.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
Good point.
But it reflects our life so well. We have a compost pit in our yard, and it's filled with vegetables that we bought with the best of intentions.
How about that?
I know.
How about that?
But, you know, it's going back to the land, so it's not the worst thing in the world.
Right.
Now, on the same subject of vegetables, whoever named the heirloom tomato probably had some disappointed grandchildren.
That's very good.
I like that. A giant rabbit died on a United flight. You remember that story?
Sure.
One man is suspected of foul play. We tried to reach him for comment, but he's being very, very quiet.
That one's stupid. I'm sorry.
You've offended Wendy with that one.
Steve Miller. Some call me the gangster of love.
Mm-hmm.
Rest of the Steve Miller band. Nobody calls him that.
That is awesome.
I don't want my friends to cry at my funeral. I want them dead years before me.
That's funny.
Bill left. Said that one.
That is something I would say.
Number 8. I always say thank you to Alexa so that when the machines take over, they will know that I am nice.
Oh, that's good too.
Okay, what if Snow White just pretended to be asleep so she didn't have to clean up after little people anymore? Because that I totally get.
That's all right.
That's good.
And the last one is, sorry I didn't make it to your ninja dress-up party. Or did I?
All right.
So those are the top 10 tweets of the month.
We have the same favorite, right? The Steve Miller
the
band
Steve
one
Miller.
Is really
yeah,
funny.
Steve, I like that.
That's hysterical.
Some people call him Maurice.
Let us also discuss, now this is a phrase that I think some people may not be aware of, but I've heard of it a couple times, the ringless voicemail. What does that mean exactly?
Well, it's this new technology that allows telemarketers, and this includes fundraisers, political campaigns, just people who want to sell you a trip to Aruba, to take a, you know, and they will, you know, they try calling you, robocalling you, but this allows them to insert a voicemail into your telephone's voicemail queue without your phone ringing. So you look at your phone and say, like, oh, I got a voicemail. I must not have heard the ring or something, but it never rang.
Right.
So there's no call charge, nothing associated with
it. I wondered how that happens.
And you press play and they'll go, hey, welcome to,
it's a new technology, right? Is it a year old?
It's a fairly new technology. And back in the early 90s, they passed a law that essentially prohibits telemarketers from robocalling cell phones. And the reason, I mean, there are some practical reasons. One is that a lot of companies, especially back then, used to charge you by the call that you received. So this was incurring an obligation on you as a consumer. And also, you know, the phone ringing when you're driving down the street, people have a hard time not answering it. And so on. It was very intrusive. Cell phones much more intrusive than a home phone. You know, our home phone rings all the time with telemarketers. We just, you know, we look at the caller ID. We don't answer it. It's not as big.
Why do you have a phone? Because really, that's the only person that calls is telemarketers.
Do you not no longer have a?
We have a landline. I know you do because you don't feel comfortable using your cell phone.
Right.
But Bill, you know how Bill communicates with semaphore code and sketches and so on. So
but I can't cut the umbilical cord yet. It's only telemarketers. Anyone who needs to call me has, even the school has my cell number now.
Oh. So Johanna likes to talk to her mom on the landline because it's a little clearer and her mom is elderly and needs all the audio
power,
boost that you can get. But for the most part, when the phone rings, I never think, oh, it's someone calling for us. I think, you know, we have to ignore that.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I do think that there's something to the number of brain cancer cases that have come up since cell phones have been in vogue. I know too many people who've been affected by it, and
Why do you let your daughters use their phone, though?
I had to stop Kylie. She would sleep with the phone right next to her head. And I just said to her, I go, don't take a chance. Just put it over on the dresser. You don't need it that close to your head.
Yeah.
I just think that there might be some correlation, and it's not worth taking a risk for me.
Well, the way technology has evolved, it used to be that you would always hold the phone by your head to have a phone call. Now, for the most part, like you see the earbuds that Wendy wears, most people, when they talk on the phone, will either use the speaker.
Or you use the speaker, and it's not even up to my head.
It's pretty close.
I seldom hold it to my ear anymore. And of course, I don't like to make phone calls in general. I'm one of those people.
I don't either.
Really, the two of you should just go have lunch and not talk.
No, that's what we like doing is talking. I don't like talking to people on the phone, but in real life, I'll talk to people all day.
We're chatty people. We're very friendly.
I'll talk to anyone who will listen by any means.
I will sign that petition.
I think that this brain cancer thing, there may be like a surge or a bulge in brain cancer because of that. I mean, I don't know the health of that. You'll get debates from the telecommunications industry that this is not a problem.
That it's inconclusive.
But I don't see, when I see my kids talking on their phones, they don't have it up to their ear. They have the earbuds with the little microphone on the cord, and so they're not holding it by their heads.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that's as...
Although
as
Bill well. Claims it's still near your head if you're talking in the speaker.
But it's too close for me.
Yeah. Well, Bill's a little nervous.
I get it.
Do you watch Better Call Saul? Why don't you just wrap your phone in aluminum foil or yourself?
I would do myself over the phone.
So anyway, this technology to get back to our...
Who's
our
that big history? Potato coming to work every day? That's Bill, just like a big
Spudsy.
Potato.
Spudsy.
Right. I'm sorry, Eric. Go ahead.
Call Malcolm. Back in the 90s, they had this law passed, and the telemarketers were frustrated. Not many people had cell phones all the time. They didn't have, it was an emerging technology. But now, as more and more people get rid of their landlines, unlike us... smart people who save money. And speaking of that, there's going to be another new tax in Chicago on your each phone line that you have.
Oh, there is?
I think that may inspire us finally to get rid of that darn landline.
What's the tax? Do you know the amount?
It's going to be like $1.40 per line or something like that.
Per year?
No, per month. Oh. So it's going to be one of these taxes that ultimately people just go, no, I don't need this anymore. Because as Wendy says, how many calls actually come in on your landline?
How are they justifying that tax, by the way? What did they...
They just need the money. That's how they justify it.
It's just that simple?
And everybody has a phone.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, they're working on taxing satellite dish transmissions.
Oh,
I mean, and they're not involved in that at all. I mean, you can justify like a cable tax because the cable uses city right-of-way. And so the dish is up in the satellite's
it's
up in
space.
The sky. There's no city property that's crossed.
Right.
So I'm imagining that's going to happen. But so these telemarketers became really frustrated.
And what about the do not call list that we've all registered for our landline and cell phone, yet they keep coming through?
Well, I'd like to talk about that. Should I talk about it now? Should I tell you about it?
You're
no,
good.
Don't do it just yet, Eric. Let us take a break.
Good he is.
And then in a few short minutes, could you talk about
yes,
it then?
Yes, I will. Let's talk about
all right.
that then.
Eric Zorn will talk about exactly what we said we're not going to talk about in just a little bit. So stay where you are. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Our friend Eric Zorn is here, Chicago Tribune columnist. We're talking about the do not call list, why telemarketers can call our cell phone, and what do we do?
Well, what they can now do, which was I wrote about this on Sunday, is they can now stick voicemails into your phone without you knowing it, without the phone ringing.
So technically, you'll
pick up the phone and they said, well, this is not a phone call.
Right.
This is, we're going server to server. It's going right in there. And what prompted this was in March, this company called All About the Message LLC or something from Florida, a Florida company, decided they would petition the FCC to make this legal. It's in kind of a gray area, and they've been sued and so on. So they've petitioned the FCC, and weighing in favor of them was the Republican National Committee because they're saying, well, this is one avenue for political speech. And the problem with this, of course, is that there's no way to block it that people know about. One of the reasons that I wrote about it was, first of all, hopefully put a little pressure on the FCC to say, no, let's not allow this. But also to give a spur to the telecommunications companies, the providers, to do something to help us block these things. Because this is where I feel one reason we talked about, landlines and telemarketers and do not call lists and so on. I think among the reasons that people got rid of their are getting rid of their landlines is that they don't have the weapons to fight back against these unwanted calls.
Mm-hmm.
On your cell phone, it's easier actually to block. If you get a call from someone, if Wendy, you want to block Bill, you just hit that, and so that
he can't
call you.
yeah, I've been calling you a lot lately.
It's not easy to do that with landlines. You can't press a button. You don't have the
right.
same sort of access. And so I think part of the reason that people got rid of their landlines is not just the cost, but the frustration of having all these calls come in they don't want. The providers are going to have to get better at protecting us from the stuff that we don't want, and it's difficult because it's an arms race, a technological arms race
yeah.
from these companies. But I think the first step has got to be for the FCC to say no, you can't slip something into somebody's voicemail inbox.
But that doesn't seem right anyway, because if they can access your number and put something on your voicemail, why couldn't they come in and like jam your phone or something? They shouldn't have access to our phone. It shouldn't make a connection until we answer it.
Well, I don't know the technology, but I think it's just the fact that they're able to get into your voicemail queue and leave something there.
But what if they left a virus or something there?
I don't think you can do viruses by voice. I'm not the tech guy. Steve Dale knows about that stuff.
No, he's pets. That's strictly pets.
But you know what I mean? Tech. It's like they're accessing your account without you hitting the OK button. That seems totally wrong.
Yes, it seems absolutely wrong to me. I was outraged when I read about this and followed up. I tried to call a company, but I reached a company with the same name in England, which is very upset.
Hello.
They were like, please stop calling us about this. But no, it's something that actually I think just has to stop. And it's one of these things where one of the things, like I use Gmail. Do you guys ever use Gmail? I mean, the Gmail has a lot of tools that it recognizes spam. It recognizes what's personal. It recognizes what's business. It helps you sort things out so they come in, so you're not just flooded with stuff that you don't want.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not singling out Gmail necessarily. I just happen to use it.
But they do a good job of it.
I think other email providers will do the same thing.
Right.
They help you control the flood of stuff that comes in.
Right.
Phone companies have got to get better at that.
Agreed.
And so if the FCC happens to okay this, which I hope they don't, then they really have to, then I think that they're going to have to join this race, this arms race, and help us stop these things.
Sure.
There's nothing more annoying. Can you imagine picking up your phone and saying, oh, I got 15 new voice messages.
And it's all...
And if 14 of them are from politicians and fundraisers...
That'd be terrible.
And travel agencies and so on.
You don't need that.
People are saying, I was talking to some people, and they said, you just delete them. No, I can just delete spam too.
Right, right, right.
And it just takes time. It's one of those things that wears you down.
It's an invasion of privacy.
It's an invasion.
It's an invasion of privacy.
And Wendy was making the point that these do not call lists aren't what they're all cracked up to.
No, they're not.
You can't register with these companies to say don't call.
Right.
So
right. Wendy and I were discussing this earlier, but I'm curious to see what you say. What happens with Kathy Griffin and what happens with Bill Maher now? Does Kathy Griffin not get to do stand-up anymore? Does Bill Maher lose his show at HBO because of a mistake that each of them has made?
I don't think Bill Maher's going to lose his job. He's been on the edge for a long time.
Right.
I'm sure you've talked about this. The joke that he made Friday night where he's talking to Ben Sasse, the senator, and Ben Sasse says, hey, you can come work in the fields for us in Nebraska, which is a strange thing for Ben Sasse to say. It almost has a bit of a racial overtone right there. And of course, Bill Maher's remark was, he says, I'm a house N-word, which was not a very funny joke and a very strange use of the word. He wasn't calling anybody that name. He was invoking the word for an unfortunate joke. I think HBO knew what they were getting when they hired Bill Maher.
Oh, without a doubt.
And maybe they'll suspend him, but
yeah.
He's apologized for it. HBO's apologized for it. Kathy Griffin, on the other hand, I mean, she lost her CNN gig, right? She has a New Year's Eve.
Yeah, that's gone.
And she lost her endorsement deal with Squatty Potty.
Right. And a bunch of stand-up dates.
The stand-up dates is what scares me a little bit.
Yeah.
I think that's temporary. I think there are lots of second acts in American media. And one thing that just comes to mind because of the basketball playoffs is Marv Albert.
Mm-hmm.
Remember all the scandal?
Yeah.
Marv Albert, was that 20 years ago or so where he was biting people or something? I forget what
and
it was.
Clubs,
but people come back. From
the
that kind
clubs,
of
too, had stated that they don't want like a ruckus created for people that are against. So it's not really they're bailing on what she did. They just don't want a circumstance because of what she
did.
Right,
true.
And I totally understand that.
I think it's temporary. I think that she can probably build herself back up. Aren't there a number of comedians who have cross the line, said things.
Sure.
I mean, obviously, there's lots of comedians who are always going over the line.
Yeah.
And occasionally they go just too far, and then there's a fuss, and people get all outraged. But generally, I mean, can you think of somebody whose career is just like, who was it? Was it Gilbert Gottfried who said something really insensitive about
he was the spokesman for Aflac, and he lost the job over
something. What was
the
it?
Tropical storms in the Pacific Rim.
Right. But I've heard him since then. He's been
he's still working,
but he lost. And somebody said something about after 9/11, they were making like jokes too quickly, and
Gilbert Gottfried
was the Gilbert Gottfried again. Yeah. Okay, well, maybe it's just the Gilbert Gottfried story. But I do think that people do recover from these things.
Oh, I hope so.
I don't have a strong feeling about Kathy Griffin either way. What she did was a strange judgment. It was just like a weird.
That's a
thing.
Good way of putting it.
I get what she was sort of trying to get at,
right?
Sort of with, because she was trying to sort of parody what Trump had said about
Carly Fiorina.
Megyn Kelly.
Oh, right.
Bleeding from
blood coming out of her wherever.
But
it was so like just sort of not funny.
Yeah.
And just sort of a disturbing image. And you know, nobody wants violence against political leaders or anybody, but nobody wants violence. And so
not even Ted Nugent.
Well,
he didn't have the visual.
Maybe.
I'll tell you, that's the difference.
The difference is the visual.
Yes, I think
it is.
I think if she had just said, "Boy, give me the bleeding head of Donald Trump," that she
yes,
been okay.
I agree.
But I do think that there are, you know, people come back from things like this. I hope so.
Yeah,
I do. Yeah.
Eric, thank you so much.
Good to talk to you guys.
That's Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune. Read him whenever you get the chance. We'll take a quick break and find out what goes on the Wintrust Business Lunch next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Thank you, Ryan.
Wendy, I have always liked, and I know you have too, Lindsay Rice from DNA Info, but I have such a new respect for her because she has a tattoo of Troy McClure from The Simpsons on her arm. And that's amazing. That's so cool.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
This is my Simpsons arm.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up obsessed with The Simpsons. Love them. Troy McClure.
Who's Bart as a bird? What's that one? I can't remember that.
That's from the Treehouse of Horror, right?
Yeah, that's when they did The Raven, and Bart was the Raven.
Right.
And I have a little one of Lisa. I have another one of...
I just like in today's day and age, a person can say, that's my Simpsons arm, and nobody looks... Everybody goes, well, that's the girl's Simpsons arm. What are you going
to
do?
Right, of course. Don't you have an arm dedicated to your favorite TV show you've gotten tattooed on yourself?
Yeah.
Bill, your whole body would be tattooed if you did your favorite shows and
my
toys.
My car 54, where are you back?
Where are you? I get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I was just going to say, it's funny you say that because Lindsay Rice is one of our favorite guests that we have here. She's a reporter, producer, DNAinfo.com in Chicago. And your beat is Edgewater, Rogers Park, and West Ridge. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You have such interesting and fascinating stories. And today, are we going to focus on homegrown Chicago type things?
Yeah.
All right. Talk to us because I love all this stuff.
Well, so this there's a new museum exhibit at the Edgewater Historical Society, and once I was kind of delving into what is this exhibit, because I, of course, love the Edgewater Historical Society.
That's an Edgewater, Bill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. They put it in the right place.
If you couldn't tell.
They nailed it.
They really did well on that, location-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's this new exhibit, and actually it was curated by a regular, everyday person who a few years ago was in an antique shop in Andersonville. He bought this old kind of like rusty scale, thought it would be like just an interesting focal piece.
A food scale?
For his kitchen. So it was just going to kind of be like a statement decorative piece.
Nice.
And he realized that it was stamped made in Chicago. And he's like, oh, that's kind of interesting. So he kind of, start Googling around, where did this come from? And he was just really fascinated by that history. So as the months went on, he kind of collected a few other things, and he said that it basically just spiraled out of control, and he was far down the rabbit hole trying to learn a lot about these companies and, just Chicago's really rich manufacturing past.
Yeah.
It was interesting because he was saying that most people, it was actually kind of difficult, even though some of these companies are really well known, because people have a tendency to not be taking pictures of their workplace,
you know,
thinking in the moment, oh, this could be interesting 50, 70 years from now.
Yeah, there were no iPhones.
Right, right. So, you know, it was a lot more of an endeavor to take a photo and to do those that kind of documentation.
Yeah.
Normally people take pictures of things like when they're finally done with work and, you know, they're out living their lives.
Right, sure.
So eventually, over the past 2 years, he's amassed like 200 pieces of things that were all just sitting in his one-bedroom apartment. And he was saying, you know, his friends knew something was going on when they would come over. And he made what he called the Made in Chicago Museum.
How cool.
It was basically a digital museum where he has great photographs, long descriptive features on the history of these with great photos, advertisements. He's made an excellent map that, you know, maps a lot of where these places were all across the city.
Mm-hmm.
And they're now on display. They have a home, a temporary home for the next year at the Chicago or at the Edgewater Historical Society.
Where is that? I know I joke and say it's in Edgewater, but do we have an address for that?
Yeah, it's 5358 North Ashland Avenue.
I have to see that. I have something that he may want, although I don't know that I'm going to part with it. Again, went to an antique store, and I have lawn ornaments in my garden, and there is one of those old sprinklers that's made of wrought iron and just like one little bar that spins around, and it says some water company, Chicago, Illinois.
Oh, yeah. He would be really interested in that, I'm sure.
All right.
I mean, there's so many just...
$1 million.
That seems like a fair price, Wendy. Yeah, get $1 million for it.
I mean, it's perfect. His stuff, it really centers around like everyday life.
Yeah.
So it has, you know, globes and tools and kitchen items, you know, attire, different things like that. One item that I found particularly interesting was the history of Maybelline in Chicago, the, you know, international
cosmetics
makeup company today. Mm-hmm. He has some of the original Maybelline tins. It was like a...
Powder came in it?
Yeah, it was like a powder, kind of like a black powder, or some of them were a little creamier, and it had like a little brush. He has those there, and that has its own incredible history, for which I fell down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
So I totally get where this guy's coming from.
Maybelline started in Chicago. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, in Edgewater, actually. And
that's Maybelline.
Isn't it Maybelline? Is that their phrase?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's it.
Isn't it Maybelline?
How do you know that?
I'm a consumer,
Maybe it's
Wendy.
Maybelline.
Maybe it's Maybelline. It might be Maybelline. I know Maybelline, of course, is still up and running and doing well, but a lot of these companies, I'm guessing, are falling away. They're not around anymore, are they?
Yeah, a lot of them, you know, just technology changing, industries changing. You know, Maybelline, for example, it started in 1915, and its founder was a closeted gay man, and he started this company after seeing his sister, whose name is Mabel, accidentally have a tragic over-bleaching accident. So
That's terrible.
Would pray for her, but her eyelashes, her eyebrows were really light, and she had
lean.
Kind of... Yeah.
That's why.
They're kind of like invisible.
Yeah.
She had made this concoction of like Vaseline and coal powder.
Oh, no.
And he saw her applying that one day and was like, is there a market for this?
He did all right.
Yeah,
because I look like James Spader if I don't wear mascara.
Right.
I really do.
Right.
He just took that idea. He ran with it. He made this company. And actually in Edgewater, the building that it was housed in for over 50 years still has a cursive M.
Oh, really?
For Maybelline.
Yeah, and, you know, above the door.
Even though they're no longer the inhabitants of the building, right? They've moved on, but wow, that's great.
Whatever happened to Maybelline? Kidding. Great Lash is always like one of the number one top mascaras, even though other companies sell mascara that's five times as much. They always say in like models' goodie bags and stuff, they always look back to Great Lash by Maybelline.
Yeah, the classic, you know, that's the one in like
pink and green.
Pink and green, exactly. You can't go wrong with the pink and green.
And Wendy, what was the wacky packages version of Maybelline? Do you remember?
No, but evidently you do.
That was a cow with her eyelashes being done up with Maybelline. one of the best wacky packages
you
of
should,
all time.
You should bring that back. I know they have made a comeback, but they need to be funnier, so right. You should write
right.
for them.
I will do that. That's my goal. Yep. All right. Let's take a quick break and then more discussion with Lindsay Rice from DNA Info. If you want to join in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right. Lindsay Rice is here, reporter, producer with DNAinfo.com here in Chicago. The Made in Chicago Museum is something we were talking about earlier. It was just originally digital, correct?
Mm, right.
But you can go to the Edgewater Historical Society, 5338 North Ashland.
5358 North Ashland.
5358. And check out some of these things. You had talked about the originator of Maybelline mascara. I can't help but think about where it began with putting Vaseline on your eyelashes and then kohl powder to like squeeze it on there to make them look darker. It would have smeared all over the place.
Right, right, which is already a problem enough as it is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there'd probably be an aroma from the kohl powder, I'm guessing, right? Wouldn't there be a slight...
Hey, smoky?
Maybe that's where the term smoky eye came from.
Isn't
that?
I bet that's true.
Yes, I don't know. Let's say yes.
Yeah, let's go with it.
All right. All right, so what's the name of the guy who invented this because his sister was putting the Vaseline in coal? His name?
His name was Thomas Lyle Williams. And his great-niece, Sherry Williams... She has done a lot of research on the family history, and I spoke with her. She wrote a book a few years ago all about the Maybelline history, and one of the reasons that she did it was to really give her great-uncle's legacy kind of the
props that
right,
it deserved.
Right, exactly, the oomph that it
the
deserves.
Yeah.
And one reason in particular was, as I had mentioned, he was in the closet. He mm-hmm. was gay. He had a longtime partner who was kind of this advertising genius. Mm-hmm. Together, they grew this company. And Maybelline started in 1915. So as it was growing in the 20s, you know, that especially in Chicago, it was a very dramatic time. You know, you got jazz, flappers, and Edgewater was this really opulent area with the Edgewater Beach Hotel and kind of like where, you know, ritziness and glam was like happening all the time. So it was really easy for him to, you know, sort of blend in a sense. He was very fashionable. Mm-hmm. He even wore makeup sometimes. And it wasn't a huge deal because a lot of people, you know, were flashy as well.
Guys, though, were guys doing that back then?
I think men were a lot more fashionable at the time. You know, wearing hats, coats, you know, nice suits with different fabrics and stuff like that. Yeah. Maybe not all wearing makeup, but maybe some.
People with blonde eyelashes. Trust me, you need it.
Yeah, right, yeah. So when the Great Depression hit, That was a turning point for him and for the company because it was not easy to be out then. It was almost impossible to be out and especially be successful and be out. And he really didn't want to be anything other than himself.
Yeah.
You know, he still wanted to express himself the way that he felt comfortable and was authentic to him. So, but it was really standing out.
Yeah.
And in a time where people were desperate for money, you know, it's calling attention to how rich his family is. And it was putting them in danger for not just him being gay, but also having money.
Mm-hmm.
So he and his partner and some of the family who were involved with the business, they packed up and moved to Hollywood. They bought this beautiful house with a pool and, you know, just surrounded by trees. And it was so much easier for him there because he really revolutionized advertising, especially cosmetics advertising, by using Hollywood starlets mm-hmm. To, you know, be the face, the literal face of Maybelline. And
to
he could kind of
it.
Like stand in the shadows.
Yeah.
You know, so you'd open a newspaper or a magazine or, you know, an ad at wherever. And there's like a paragraph about describing Maybelline and why every woman needs it. And then you, you know, see these beautiful, iconic faces that mm-hmm. normally you would only see in a silver screen. But that was kind of, that it kind of even goes back to Maybelline's origins, where when he saw what his sister was wearing, the dark makeup, that was really only something that people had been seeing in, you know, like silent films
right.
and,
oh, yeah.
and things like that, you know, to pronounce facial features and things like that, but you didn't see it so much in everyday use.
Yeah.
So he really, with the inspiration of his sister, popularized that a lot.
And I got to write him a thank you note for his ancestors.
It might be too late.
Yeah, I know.
He really was an LGBT kind of pioneer of industry in his time, though didn't have that recognition. You know, but of course, as many other LGBT pioneers and other types of pioneers, you know, same. But, you know, now it's June. It's Pride Month. It was just a really nice story to kind of draw attention to his incredible contributions to beauty.
Real quick, you mentioned the Edgewater Beach Hotel, and I have seen, and I'm sure you've seen the same posters I have, posters from like the 1920s and 1930s where the Edgewater Beach Hotel really looks like it's out of Miami, Florida. It has this tropical look. You wouldn't associate it with Chicago because we only have that kind of weather a couple months.
Right.
But those pictures just made it look like a palace and almost like a southern palace. It had quite a reputation back then, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it was amazing. And it really put the neighborhood on the map.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a destination for athletes, politicians, movie stars. Martin Luther King Jr. spoke there.
Yeah.
So many amazing people throughout the years. And like many things, you know, it had a deterioration over time, which a lot of it had to do with the expansion of Lakeshore Drive in the 50s, kind of cutting off their private beach, which was a huge draw.
They reconfigured that whole beach area, didn't they?
Right, yeah. So that changed it a lot. Then they had a private pool, and it just wasn't the same.
Mm-hmm.
But that the hotel itself was just such an amazing thing. Yeah, and it really was like out of another state altogether.
All right, she's Lindsay Rice. She's with DNAinfo.com. And how do we read about this? Also, Zenith is another company that just began. We only have 30 seconds here, but it was a tiny little shack that sold electronics.
It was this tiny. It started in a kitchen between two friends who had been in the Navy, and then the Edgewater Beach Hotel allowed it to use this itty-bitty literal radio shack on its property to have a little space to manufacture electronics and also have a little satellite. And of course now it's this international company owned by LG. So it's just,
it's amazing, man. And we all owe it to Chicago. How can we read more about everything you've put together? She's Lindsay Rice, by the way.
You can go to DNAinfo.com/Chicago
and follow her on Twitter, Lindsay Rice, LINZERICE. Thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you guys.
Thanks, Lindsay. Appreciate it. We'll take a quick break. We have news next and then more show, Bill and Wendy, WGN.